This is Artist Stories, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County. I'm your host, Ava Romero. Today, I'm with Ryan Hill, Director of Sculpture Tucson. Welcome, Ryan.
Well, thanks for inviting me, and I'm happy to be here.
Ryan, tell us about the pop-up sculpture park that Sculpture Tucson is putting on until the end of May.
Well, it's located at the Hacienda del Sol in the lower level parking lot. It's open from 9 to 7 p.m. daily, and it runs through May 31st. And it's basically set up so that people can drive through it in their cars. There are sculptures lined up on the sides of the lot, and people can kind of make their own tour through it. There's signs with information, and also food could be ordered for pickup from the hacienda at any point. So it's a great way for people to see sculptures, especially large-scale sculpture outdoors, and there's at least 23 different local artists that are represented. It's a way to do social distancing and have an art experience. So people seem to be really excited about it, seem to really like it, and there's something really fun about it.
Yeah, I was really excited to find out about the event and go attend. It was a really early offering. There are more and more artists and arts organizations trying to figure out what they can do while observing social distancing. And this is one of the first events that I saw and actually got to go to. It was really fun. We went closer to sunset, a beautiful time of day. We just drove up and down the parking lot and looked at all the pieces. The posters that tell you a little about the piece and the artist. And it was great that those could actually be read from inside the car.
Yeah, there's also, those posters are also online. So if people want to go to our website, they can check out what artists are at the pop-up. Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I think the thing that we learned from doing this is that there needs to always be an online component for people who can't, you know, make it out. But that having both, having what I call parallel worlds and like a, you know, in real life and then also a virtual, and that they complement each other. It's a little bit like when you go to a play, you can read your program afterwards to refresh your memory. That's kind of how I think we're thinking about how we're using the website for this exhibition.
Yeah, that's an excellent way to go. And there are some really impressive artists who are part of this pop-up. How did you get them involved?
Usually when we curate with a open call to artists, and we, you know, put it everywhere and anyone can apply. That's how we do the festival. For this, the turnaround was very quickly, and we worked with artists who had shown at the festival, with Sculpture Tucson's annual festival before. It was not our usual process, but it was, because it was a very quick turnaround, like I think less than 3 weeks. The artists that came together were ones, too, that were doing work that was large-scale outdoor work that would work well in a parking lot, would look nice against kind of the background of the foothills. They aren't like indoor tabletop kinds of sculpture. So there are not as many people who do that kind of work. And so a lot of the people we brought in were people who are known for doing it.
I understand that some of the pieces have already sold.
Yes, some pieces, I think about three to four pieces have sold, and we still have another week. While the intention, I don't think, was originally just to sell work, that's not really, as a nonprofit, that's not really what our motivation is. It's really to create appreciation and opportunities, professional opportunities for sculptors, and to just support the work that they do. So it's a nice kind of, for me at least, that it's a nice kind of result of it. I think people are seeing the work in a new setting, and it gives them a new appreciation, and I guess they want to have it. So that's fantastic. And a lot of the artists had priced their work to be work to, they call COVID prices, you know, prices that are a little, that are taking in consideration that people might be experiencing hardship. So they're, yeah. And it, I mean, it's been a great way for us to kind of fill in the gap that was left by the canceling of our annual festival, which we have at Brandy Fenton Memorial Park. And so doing this pop-up at Hacienda del Sol, it really allowed us to kind of still serve our mission and figure out how to do that, you know, with the current crisis. So many, I think, arts organizations are going online, but there's something about, well, it's pretty obvious, it's sculpture. You got to see it in the round. You got to be able to walk around it. You got to be able to be close to it physically. And this was a way for us to kind of still honor that and yet have some safe distance. So I think it worked out to be really successful and people seem to really like it. I mean, our opening weekend, we got about over 250 people coming to see it. And I can tell you a little bit about how the idea came about. I mean, we usually do this 3-day annual festival with 65 artist booths, and it has continuous live music and demonstrations and art talks and food trucks. It's like a real production. The central area is dedicated to large scale sculpture. So a lot of the artists that usually show in that central area are the ones that were picked to also be at the pop-up at Hacienda del Sol. Our main fundraiser was the gala. So we lost that gala party and had to figure out kind of how do we give our donors and our supporters something so that we can continue to remain, you know, committed to our mission and do things within this time. It wasn't really until Tucson's Festival of Books canceled that we thought, oh gosh, we got to cancel the festival. And then about a week or so later, the idea came up because one of our board members is associated with Hacienda del Sol. It's actually one of the founding partners. And they had included a new kind of lower level parking lot. They built a new one. The space was there. The crisis was kind of there. And then we thought, let's draw upon the artists that can, you know, help support this and just get their work out there in some sort of way. It's happened very quickly, and it kind of shows you that when you work quickly and you work within constraints, that sometimes really innovative things happen. And I think that's something artists are constantly aware of, not only because of the way that they have to make a living and the way they have to survive in order to be a creative person, but also just that working within limits is built into the materials of an artist, that materials are limited. You have to work with what goes on with them. If your finances are limited, you have to work with those limits. So creative people naturally know how to kind of survive. That's the way I think about it. And they come up with really innovative solutions that folks that have a lot of money or institutions that have been around a long time may not be nimble enough to do. So it's been a really interesting, you know, process for me as someone who's worked in large museums for so long until up to moving here. We've also been kind of like gathering resources together, along with working with a small team from Hacienda del Sol. We also worked with SACA to help publicize the event. It's been, yeah, a real team effort. People will see things if you give them fresh ways of seeing them, right? So like the having the sculpture in the parking lot, it's different than if you had it in an art space. And people see it differently and interact with it differently. And that kind of makes it new and exciting, at least for me, to see art presented in ways that are in mundane surroundings or in ways without all the kind of institutional framing that either museums or galleries put around it, which a lot of times can be a barrier to people kind of enjoying art. So there's something kind of cool about having it in a parking lot, like it's a drive-in movie theater. I think it makes it more accessible.
Absolutely. And even for people who might have mobility issues, to not have to get out of their car and just be driven there, that presents a unique opportunity.
Definitely. I saw people with their families. You know, it's an outing. People are making it into an outing. People are going back a couple of times to visit. Yeah, I have friends who say, well, you know, this whole quarantine thing is working great for me because I already have social anxiety and I just want to stay home anyway, or I don't want to have to deal with people. So now this could bring on a whole new rash of like cultural events that are made for people with social anxiety where they can just stay in their car and they don't have to talk to the people.
I know that it wasn't the goal of the event to sell pieces, but the fact that pieces sold within the context of the event seems hopeful.
Yeah, no, I think it's hopeful, definitely. I mean, I was going to say there's one artist who kind of wasn't, her work isn't necessarily monumental, but it was, large scale ceramics. Judy Gans made a work called Make Music with Summer Breezes. For me, one of the things is because I've worked in museums before, there's so many teams involved in actually putting on work. So you don't really just have an artist just come in and like do everything, unless that's been arranged. And usually that's only happening with like contemporary artists. So what it was really cool for me to see during the pop-up was all the artists and how hands-on everyone is, just helping each other, like unload the work from trucks. And I mean, you know, it was done with a very small budget. So it was really all hands on deck. But what's great about Judy Gann's piece, and a piece that I really like, is that it seems, for me, I thought, oh, this is ceramic. It's going to be fragile. How is it going to work, you know, in this open environment? But actually, it's like ceramic stoneware. So it's super, I think it's a lot denser. And the way that she built it in sections. So it's almost like pieced together like a puzzle to make its final kind of presentation. So it was really fun to see her kind of do that. And what I really liked about her being able to show her work at the pop-up was she was going to show it at the festival. And so the fact that she was able to, you know, sell the work, show it again. Usually monumental sculpture or large sculpture is done in things, materials that are, you know, basically very, don't have a delicacy, and don't, and often have a certain machismo to them. So it was really good for me to see someone who was making work that was made out of a material like ceramic, but also kind of monumental and picking up space. So that was, I thought that was cool. And it was great that someone also saw what we saw and wanted to have the work for their own. So that's super, super fun.
Could you kind of describe that piece our listeners?
So the way that, so the piece is on these black little platforms, and they are birch. They're like the white striped birch trees. They're made out of a glazed ceramic. So they have probably a semi-gloss, and they're very stark and white, and they bend up towards the sky like they are, you know, growing, but they're made out of ceramic. You know, they're very stately in the way that nature can be, but they're made out of a material, so they're obviously sculpture and not, you know, it's realistic, but it's also, there's something about it that's very much about just formal aspects of just like the color and the contrast of the way that the branches grow out of the ground, and then how that looks like in its environment.
Ryan, tell us about the call to artists for the joint exhibition hosted by Sculpture Tucson and Tucson Botanical Gardens.
We're in partnership with the Tucson Botanical Gardens to have an exhibition from September 26th through January 3rd. And that exhibition is actually in their gardens. We're going to kind of ask artists to apply their methods or their techniques that they use in the studio and with their sculpture to the theme of birdhouses and nests. So the theme is kind of birdhouses and nests, which makes a lot of sense for, you know, a place dedicated to plants and gardens. The sculptors are asked to make, you know, show public work that can, you know, withstand the elements, but also is engaged somehow with birdhouses and nests. And I think it'll be a really great opportunity for artists who may not have worked with that subject matter before to kind of play around with it. There's an honorarium of $500 that each artist gets as a gesture to support that kind of exploration. But the idea is that when September comes, that the Tucson Botanical Gardens will be showing all new work by these artists that are based on that theme.
Talk to us about why Barbara Gray-Gudis, Stephen Kimball, and Jeff Tyman started Sculpture Tucson.
Just a little background on Barbara. She's the board president, and she's made over 75 large-scale works of public art all over the nation. She's been in biennials and all sorts of things. And you can see her work in Tucson at the Keno Parkway Bridge. Steve Kimball has designed and built Metal Arts Village on Dodge Boulevard, if you're familiar with it. It's like a community for sculptors and has all kinds of activities. And then Jeff, who we talked about a little bit earlier, and actually the brainchild of Jeff and his team has been the pop-up. So that's thanks to him. He was one of the founding partners of Hacienda del Sol Guest Ranch and Resort. So that's the tie. But also to all the board members, are all, you know, artists in their own right and very dedicated to making sculpture and have an ongoing practice. So their investment in terms of making a mission that's devoted to, you know, sculpture as a profession in Tucson, I think comes out of all of them feeling like they want to give back and also being invested in kind of supporting, you know, new generations of artists. So in 2018, it was the first thing they produced was the annual show Festival and Sale. And it was based basically on Steve Kimball had been to Loveland's Sculpture in the Park Show and Sale in Colorado and took them there. And it was a great model for what a festival could be. So along with, you know, Jeff, Steve, and Barbara, there's also Moira Giafron and Terrell Du Johnson, and they're part of the advisory board. Johnson is a nationally recognized Tohono O'odham basket weaver and community activist. And then Moira is used to be the head of the University of Arizona Art Department. So both of them have also had long standing in the Tucson community, but also, again, practicing artists, which, you know, makes the board really unique and interesting.
Ryan, could you tell us a bit about your artistic and professional journey and what are you working on now?
I'm a practicing artist. I have a gallery in Washington, D.C. I don't show my work all the time. In fact, I tend to work from project to project as opposed to fulfilling a need at a gallery per se. My gallerist kind of knows that. So I've been working, you know, I've been trained as an artist. I went to, you know, art school both as an undergrad and a graduate. Then also I have been a teacher. So I basically started to teach in order to kind of, you know, support myself as an artist. And that teaching then ended up being teaching at universities, but also teaching at museums. So at some point I ended up becoming a museum professional, both as a manager and an administrator. So that's what led me to be working for Sculpture Tucson over time, was that when I moved to the East Coast to work in museums, when I moved back to Tucson, the kind of work that I could find was more as an administrator. So in the long run, it's taken a turn that's been allowed me more time to make my work, which is great. But at the same time, you know, I miss it. It gave me a really unusual, like, model to come to start working on a nonprofit in, which is working in really big institutions and then kind of like coming to a small institution and, well, or small, it's really, you know, small nonprofit and really kind of dealing with the nimbleness and the, you know, the kind of let's make it work kind of attitude, you know. That's been really great and refreshing. So right now I do Sculpture Tucson as the director, and then I'm also teaching. I'll be teaching some summer classes at Drawing Studio, and then I'll be teaching in the fall at Pima. And I teach usually like drawing classes, design classes, and undergraduate classes, yeah. And I have a studio downtown that I just moved into, so I'm working on a drawing series. And the drawing series is kind of loosely inspired by my work in museums and thinking about, having time to think about it within the new dialogue of, like, you know, institutions as colonizers. And kind of playing with that idea in a different sort of way. I've been trained as an essayist. I went to a film school, and between undergrad art and then graduate art school at CalArts, I went to film school at UCLA for film theory and history. So I still kind of think about my drawing series as kind of like essays, you know. All the drawings fitting together and working off of each other in interesting ways and kind of in dialogue with each other. So
I find it particularly interesting that you have this long history in museums and your art now is more about decolonizing the museum space.
When I started working in museums, I started working at MoCA Los Angeles, or LA MoCA. And I grew up in Los Angeles. So everyone I was working with in the education department, and I applied for the job, and then they weren't interested. And then I started teaching at a college, and then I came back, and I think I had a lot more confidence, and so they hired me. So they hired me as, you know, basically a part-time educator to do tours. And that's kind of, I love art interpretation. That's like, I love to get in front of a piece of art with a group of people and just talk about it and see what it brings up for people. And I come from a family of psychologists, so I really enjoy the listening as well as kind of like trying to tease out meaning. But to get back to working at LA MoCA, I worked with a very diverse group of educators. They were all people who either came out of like the public school kind of background in terms of being teachers that were now working at museums, or they were reflecting all the communities that were in LA. And so those people are my friends, and they were also my workmates. And I wanted to have that happen in every museum I worked in. And over time, I was at some museums that were more supportive of that, and then other museums that weren't, you know, maybe didn't even challenge the fact that their hiring practices were based on wanting to see themselves reflected as opposed to the different communities surrounding a museum reflected, or that a person with a different life experience based on their gender identification, their sexuality, their race, their income level, or ableness might bring in new perspectives that might change the museum. So it started my, you know, I got in some ways politicized over time working museums about what the infrastructure of a museum supports and then what it doesn't support, and what are the things that kind of keep it nimble and what are the things that don't. Among my colleagues, I mean, we've all been like, well, except for myself now, but in museums for 20 years, we've seen a lot of changes happen, and a lot of that has to be done, you know, is around diversity, equity, and inclusion, and just trying to figure out how to change museums by the staff that you hire and by the artists that you show, and also creating structures that actually embrace different kinds of experiences and backgrounds so that people who you hire stay. So it's a, you know, it's a lot to talk about, and but it's kind of the changes that are happening that are happening in museums prior to the whole quarantine and the coronavirus crisis. And so now my friends who are working in these museums and still, you know, really trying to push this work forward are wondering, like, how do we continue to talk about these things when people are just thinking about like the bottom lines of the business of a museum or the bottom lines of the business of a gallery, you know? So it is about how we do business, and it's about who we do business with, and it's about people of color being part of that, not only conversation, but being decision makers in terms of how this business of art and culture is run. And I think it's an interesting thing for museums to have really transparent conversations about, yes, they're a business, but how can they run their business differently? And how do they change like their board members to reflect the different communities that are surrounding them? You know, I'm dedicated to it, even though I'm, you know, like an old white guy, I'm dedicated to it because I think culture is really about being exposed to new experiences and to difference and to the fact that everyone is coming from a different place and interprets things differently, as well as expresses their life experiences in different ways. And I want to see that variety in the world that I live in. So I'm committed to it just out of selfishness, to be honest, just because that's the kind of world I want to live in. And I think there's a lot of people who feel like that, and I think are working in museums with that change in mind. And so as a person now no longer working in museums, I'm starting to think about how to bring that into my artwork without it being too pedantic. Or I tend to bring a lot of humor into my work, so sometimes the seriousness gets a little lost, but it's there. Anyway, I'll be doing a takeover of MoCA's MoCA Tucson's Instagram, and so it'll give me a chance to kind of hopefully play around with that a little bit. You know, I worked at an Ivy League institution before moving here. I looked like a lot of people as a white, you know, person and a male and an older male. I looked like a lot of people that worked at this Ivy League institution. And I think that they often work, they brought in artists, artists of color, queer artists. They brought in people temporarily to do an exhibition, but they never wanted to do the deep change of changing who is behind the scenes, which is a lot of big part of the identity of a museum is not just what they show or what they research or the information they share or that they're meaningful to a community, but that it's also about like, are they embracing change? And how do you show that change? And a lot of times I think museums rely on exhibitions to do that. And I don't think that that's long lasting. And I think that that's a way for basically old structures that museums were set up to protect to maintain. So there's no change of legacy. There's only a temporary change in responding to the moment. What happens when your legacy needs to change, and who is going to help plan that legacy going forward, and what values are they going to reflect? So when I was at this Ivy League institution, most of the people coming out of it or people working it have come out of it. So they already knew kind of the language, the Ivy League language. They already knew kind of like a sense of privilege and probably entitlement that they didn't question among each other. And my background is not, it's like lower to middle class. I went to a community college. I didn't have an Ivy League background. And even though I looked like these folks, I was made to feel very different. And also was not, I think, acknowledged for what I was bringing to the table because it was too much of a change for them to actually absorb as a conservative institution. So it's a problem. You know, because I think people are trying to change it from within. The change can only happen around issues of diversifying staff and diversifying boards and creating management structures that are less based on fear and more based on embracing difference and acknowledging that people have different work styles. To be inclusive is also to create structures that allow for inclusivity. And to be honest, I feel like I can only speak to my experience of it. But, there are many people who are doing this work in much more powerful ways and based on their own experiences as people of color. I can speak in terms of class issues, and I can speak from a person who's queer. You know, you want to feel like you're among friends when you work, and they can be as friendly as possible. But if they don't have the same experiences as you and you don't feel that supported, it's harder to do your good work. So there needs to be a sense of that, I think. I mean, that's democracy. And actually, I never was really interested in democracy as a kid. I just was like, oh, you know, I enjoy all of these freedoms I have. But it wasn't really until I started doing art interpretation that I started respecting democracy, because it was really important for me in standing in front of a work to open up the conversation to as many people as possible. So all the voices were included and we could get a fuller picture of what the experience of the artwork is for an entire group. And that made me have to start thinking democratically, because I wanted a deeper and more meaningful interpretation of the artwork. And it was based on multiple voices. And then after a while, I started to realize, oh, wow, that's what's happening within the structure of the museum and within who's hired at a museum and also the culture of the museum and what they allow to be said and not said. I'm working out the best I can in my drawing series and trying to have fun with the passion I have around.
Thank you so much for speaking with us today, Ryan.
Oh, thank you. I hope it was interesting, and I appreciate just having the platform to talk about my experience and my ideas and to talk about Sculpture Tucson, which is this great new nonprofit that has all this potential, and I'm really excited about the direction they can go.
This has been Artist Stories with Ava Romero, featuring the stories of artists and arts organizations in our region. To listen to more podcasts, visit kxci.org. Artist Stories is a project of the Arts Foundation for Tucson and Southern Arizona, which is partially funded by the City of Tucson and Pima County.